Welcome back. Brand new episode, Signals from the Deep. We're bringing the energy, Grant Beery. We're also bringing the heat. Because as soon as I stepped off the plane at Palm Springs Airport, I started to not only sweat, but I started to get a tan.
Yep.
And the first thing I looked for was SPF 1000. Because though I have pretty good tanning Italian Polish skin, it's pretty hot down here, but I like it. And I can really absolutely get used to this warm weather. We've got a heck of a podcast today. We got a couple of legends. We got a couple of great people. And it's really awesome to be able to come down here. Thank you to the Kraken for allowing me and us to be able to come down here and give everybody the lowdown and the live up-to-date information on what's going on with the Firebirds and their great playoff run that they're in right now. For those that don't know, 1-1 is their first-round playoff series in a best-of-five against the Calgary Wranglers. 4-1 was the game-one win for Calgary. Game-two, 4-3 win for the Firebirds, a big overtime game-winner from a guy that a lot of Kraken fans will know, that being Devin Shore. Grant, what have you thought of your short time here so far in Palm Desert?
I don't have the same tan as you. I'm a little more pale, so it's definitely, I'm going to need probably double the amount of sunscreen as you, but this is a gorgeous place to be. I've never been to this part of the country before, and it's sunny. There's a lot of mountains, which reminds me of home back in Colorado. Mm-hmm. What a place that has really embraced this team so far. I mean, I was wearing a Firebirds t-shirt when I landed, and everybody just wanted to talk. Yeah. Immediately, like, oh, Firebirds, all right.
Was that the shirt, or just because you're a very approachable guy?
I little column A, little column B. Probably both. Yeah, maybe it's the mustache I'm sporting right now.
But it's great to be down here. Again, thank you to the Kraken and everybody for allowing us to come down and get some content for everybody. So we got a fantastic podcast for you today, and we're going to start it off with a couple of player interviews. Mm-hmm. And a big thank you to the Firebirds, especially Evan Pivnik, for getting all this set up for us. And we're going to start with a guy who everyone in Kraken Nation is going to know. Mm-hmm. Everyone in Firebird Nation is going to know. A supremely talented defenseman who has shown that he is just as good offensively as he is defensively. A guy that's got a long professional career ahead of himself. And a guy that played a very important role on the Kraken this year, especially on the power play. His name is Riker Evans, and he stopped by to have a couple of words with me just a short while ago. All right, Riker, heading into game three. Tough first game for you guys after kind of that long break after your regular season ended. What do you think was the biggest difference from game one to game two in the first round series against Calgary?
Yeah, honestly, it was just getting our legs under us. 14 days is tough. We don't want that to be the excuse, so we had to come out harder and kind of find our game a little bit. It was a gritty one, that second one, but we kind of needed it.
As a D that takes just as much pride on the offensive side as you do defensively, how important is it for you to be involved in the offense, and what kind of pressure do you think that puts on the opposition to force them into defending in different ways?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, when you see defensemen going around the O-zone, it kind of messes up their D-zone. It gets them kind of jumbled up, so I just want to do my best doing that. Obviously, generating some offense here and there to help out our team and hopefully have success.
And one more thing on that, there's obviously different times when you want to jump into the play or you don't, kind of about reading and reacting. What are some of those things you can maybe take some of our listeners into as far as thinking, okay, I'm going to take this chance to jump into the play or I'm not? What are you paying attention to with making those decisions?
Yeah, honestly, it's all the reads, seeing what's up ice, what the numbers are, if we have support back. As you get playing through the system, you kind of realize the autos and when to go. I find coming to a D zone, if the puck's up the wall, I can find some space to jump up. Obviously, if there's space, I'll skate it too. It's really all read and trusting your instincts.
You had a great playoff run last year with Coachella Valley. You got a taste of what it's like to be at Acrisure Arena when it's sold out, fans going crazy. What are you anticipating ahead of game one on Wednesday against Calgary?
Yeah, I'm excited to be back and playing in front of these guys. The building and playoffs have been awesome last year. And I mean, I can't wait to play in front of them.
And lastly, great year for you up in Seattle. you could tell, at least from my vantage point in the broadcast booth, you grew a lot as a player. I'm sure your confidence did as well. But how did that help you, and how is it going to help you moving forward and hopefully a long playoff run for you guys this season?
Yeah, honestly, it's a mindset thing. Obviously, you dream of getting there. You may have a little doubt at first, but I mean, once you're out there and you're having success, you know you belong. And I think now it's just a mindset thing. Like, I know I can make the right plays and the reads and the confidence is there. So just doing that kind of thing, it will help us hopefully make a long run here in the playoffs.
All right, Riker, thanks for your time and good luck.
Awesome. Thank you.
Some awesome insight there for Riker Evans. And I really loved, Grant, what he talked about is the confidence that he earned and was able to develop playing those games with the Seattle Kraken. And I'll tell you what, when you're in the National Hockey League and you get to that point where you feel like you belong, it's a pretty darn good feeling. And he has absolutely proven that at that level, and now getting another opportunity to go on hopefully a long playoff run here down in Coachella Valley is a really awesome thing for him. And another guy who is continuing to develop, is continuing to mature, continuing to grow both on and off the ice, and a guy that also made a great impact with the Kraken towards the end of the year when he had 4 goals, Shane Wright. There's been a lot talked about him, but the one thing that I appreciate most about Shane, and you're going to hear it in our interview that we do with him shortly, is he doesn't lack confidence, and he always seems to be cool, calm, and collected, and a lot of great responses from him as he shares a few words with us. All right, Shane, we're doing this interview a few days before Game 3. I just want your take on the series so far. Tough loss in Game 1 after that long layoff that you guys had. You lose 4-1, but then a huge comeback in Game 2, Devin Shore with the overtime winner. What has been your thought process on the series so far, where it really kind of has been back and forth?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a hard-fought battle. I mean, we knew coming into it, we knew they're a strong team. They're obviously talented, and it's going to be a hard physical series, and that's what it's been these first two games. It's been really competitive, not a lot of space out there, and guys really fighting for every inch they get. So it's been a lot of fun. It's been a tough series, and definitely nice to get the split there, come back home here.
It's my first time down in Palm Desert, and when I got off the plane, I started to sweat right away and looking for SPF 1,000, really. But the one thing that is very evident is the support for the team all around the city. I noticed it on my way in from the airport. As a player, as an important part of this team, how much does this fan base mean to you, as well as the deep run you guys made last year where it was like a sold-out building every game?
Yeah, I mean, the support here we've had all season has been incredible. I mean, the fans here been with us every step of the way, and has always been, always have our backs, always supporting us, always selling out the crowd and for a home game. So, I mean, the support all throughout the Valley, and I mean, you talk to anyone here, they always kind of say they're a fan of the Firebirds. So we're really lucky to be playing here, really lucky to have these fans, and appreciate all their support.
When the Firebirds are playing at their best, what are a couple of words on how you guys were playing, both on the defensive side of the puck as well as offensively?
Yeah, I think playing fast, playing relentless. I think, two words that kind of describe our game. We want to play fast. We want to, transition quick. We want to play in the O zone fast and close fast in the D zone as well, take away their time and space. And, I think that's, being relentless on pucks, being competitive on pucks, being hungry to win battles is how we've had success all year. And that's kind of, Coach Disco's been, instilling us this year.
And lastly, you've had a great year so far. Take me through playing for the Kraken, getting those 4 great goals that you got, a lot of buzz around the city. How did that experience and that time in the National Hockey League, do you think, help you now, hopefully preparing for a deep playoff run?
Yeah, I mean, it really helped me. Obviously nice to be able to get those couple of games and, scoring goals is always a good feeling too. And, hopefully try to just bring that confidence, bring that experience back here and, play with that same confidence, just play with that jump and, play with confidence, play with the puck and, go enjoy it and hopefully, help the team, make a run here in the playoffs.
And quickly to dovetail off of that, you score a lot of your goals around the net. What's the biggest key if there are other hockey players that are listening that are
are either maybe some older hockey players that are playing in beer league or younger hockey players. What's the key to having success as far as scoring around the net for you?
Yeah, I think it's just being willing to get there in front of the net. You know, especially this time of year in playoffs, and you might take a cross check or two. Might have to battle in front for position, but be able to get to net front, but also arrive at good times. I think that's a big thing. Not being too early on pucks, being able to arrive at the right time when the pucks kind of get into an open space, and just battling. Just wanting that puck more than the guy you're against is always a big thing as well. Being competitive, being hungry, and fighting for every inch you have out there.
All right, Shane, thanks for your time and best of luck the rest of the way.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate it.
From one guy cutting his teeth, finding his way, continuing to grow, we now transition to a guy that's been doing it for a long time. Different role, but a role that is necessary, I think, in the game of hockey these days. We're going to be talking to Johnny Hayden, and a guy that has made a career of being a phenomenal professional, an incredible teammate, and a guy that knows, accepts, and executes on his role as well as anybody does. Thanks a lot for John Hayden taking some time for us. And I'll tell you what, folks, he's got some extremely insightful answers coming for you right now.
Well, there was a lot of people I was really excited to talk to when I came down to Palm Desert. And Johnny Hayden was certainly at the top of that list. John, ahead of time, thanks for your time. First off, I just want to get your thoughts on the support that you guys have down here. From the ride from the airport to where I'm staying, being around town, it's like firebirds everywhere. So what does that support mean to you guys? And how has it helped you so far in your time here in Palm Springs?
It's been amazing. It started last year, December. We had the delay. We stayed in Seattle, and we came down here, and it was such a pleasant surprise to have a building like this sold out most nights. You're right. The support around town's amazing. T-shirts and bumper stickers everywhere. So it's a blessing to have that kind of support.
How about the series now? We're doing this interview just a day before the Game 3 against the Calgary Wranglers. First game, lost. Second game, big overtime winner. What has been your thoughts on the series so far and what Calgary has brought and what you guys have been able to do, especially in Game 2?
And we had talked before about the culture on the team. One thing we understood coming into the series was managing high highs and low lows would be important. Thought that first game was sort of a low, and we rebounded well. Even in the game, going down a couple times, proof of our resilience. So we feel pretty good going into Game 3.
As far as the culture, I want to ask, I know you can't go too deep, but it's important to have a locker room that you can laugh when you need to laugh and you can get serious when you need to turn it on. What's the makeup like in the dressing room? Seems like you guys got a really good mix of veterans that have played in the National Hockey League for a long time, like yourself, but also some younger guys that are impressionable and guys you can take under your wing.
Yeah, it's been great. Starting with Max, he's done a great job of leading from the front. And then our rookies, they really buy into everything we want to do. It's a big reason why our culture is so good. The rookies have done a great job. I think for us, we're really good at adapting to each situation. And this year wasn't perfect, and we know playoffs aren't going to be perfect. So having the poise that we do in the locker room is going to go a long way.
How about a guy like Chris Drieger? He's battled some injuries the last couple of years. He had a great season, 24 wins. He's played pretty darn good in the playoffs, too, so far. To have a guy like that back there, and it goes for all your goalies where you're pretty confident in, but especially Driegs in particular, as a forward, as a player, does that give you a little extra confidence to play on your toes when you got a goalie that's going to be able to make the saves that he needs to make and maybe somewhere maybe he shouldn't, but he's got the skill to be able to do so?
Totally. It's already evident the last two games. He's a stud in the crease. It gives us a ton of confidence. But I think more importantly, he's just an all-class guy. He is a huge part of our culture here, really just stand up in all ways. And we spend a lot of time together, and it's been great.
John, thanks for your time, and good luck in Game 3.
So far in all of these interviews that we've done, the one thing that's been very apparent to me is how glowingly all of these guys talk about each other. It really is a family, kind of like you and I, right, Grant?
Oh, yeah.
Kind of like the Kraken, kind of like the Firebirds. And that really is the prerequisite to a team. You got to enjoy everybody. You got to enjoy every moment together. And you could see and hear how highly in our interviews, but also just being around here in the Valley, how highly everybody speaks of our next guest. Chris Drieger has played in the NHL a good while, has come through a lot of injuries to get to where he's at now. And boy, oh boy, has he had a statistically great year leading into the playoffs. And he's been pretty darn solid in the playoffs so far. And I always find it so interesting because I don't see the game from a goalie's point of view. I see it from a forward's point of view. But to be able to hear him give us some and shed some light and some information on what it means to be a goaltender, especially at this important time of the year, there's a lot of great information here. And here's Chris Drieger with a couple of words.
Honored to be joined by the Chris Drieger. Driegs, before we talk about the playoffs and where you guys are currently at right now, I wanted to ask you about your journey getting to this season. Dealt with a big injury recently last year, and this season you found a way to accumulate 24 wins, a heck of a goals against .226 in the regular season, and a .917 save percentage, some awesome stats. But what's your journey been like to get to this point and the great regular season that you had?
Well, it all starts with the good team that we have here. That helps a lot, especially from a goaltender's perspective. Got a good squad, good group of guys, and yeah, it's just been a matter of getting back in the cage and getting back to my game. So it's been a good stint. Played a bunch of games. Feeling pretty happy with where my game's at, and just kind of looking to take that into a long playoff road here.
You talk about the guys, the culture, the chemistry. Talked a little bit about that with Johnny Hayden just a few minutes ago. What is the chemistry like in the dressing room, if you can kind of take me behind the scenes of the connection that all of you guys have, good mix of veterans, younger guys, and how that's helped you guys be so successful to this point?
We have an incredible group of veterans on this team. And that being said, we also have an incredible group of rookies that have fit in pretty seamlessly. When you have a group of guys that's mostly been together for a couple seasons now, just good leadership, starting with Max McCormick, guys like John Hayden, Cale Fleury, Devin Shore, guys have just been around, tons of guys, Cole Lind, played in the NHL. It just creates a little bit of confidence and just a group that knows how to get the job done. And when we bring in 8 rookies this season, I think that core group, it does a great job of just leading the way and showing them what it takes to be a professional hockey player. And you can see with the success our young guys have had this year, I think it's been a huge part of it, just the veterans showing what culture's like, what it takes to make it to the next level. And I think it's paid off for our group.
As far as the playoff series you guys are in right now, we're doing this interview just the day before Game 3. Series tied at 1, big overtime goal in Game 2 by Devin Shore. I've gotten the sense that maybe you guys haven't played your best lately. So in your opinion, what is it going to take to be able to get your game where it needs to be moving forward?
Well, I think when we play our game, I don't know if there's a team in this league that can play with us. And we had a bit of a break there, 12 days off, I believe it was. And I think we felt it in Game 1 for sure, felt it a little bit in Game 2. But at the same time, there's no underestimating that team over there. They're a good squad. They play hard. They came out firing. And we've had some good matchups with them, playoffs last season and just throughout the regular season as well. So we've got a tenacious group over there. But I think when we get back to skating and executing the way we can, it's really, really hard to play against us. So if we get back to that, that's how we go forward and win the next few games here.
And lastly, if you don't get good goaltending, you don't have a chance to win. That's just the reality of it. And I want you to pump your tires as much as you can, even though I know you're not that type of guy. But when you're playing your best and you're really feeling it and you're really seeing the puck and you're stopping everything and maybe the puck looks less like a golf ball, more like a beach ball. What are some of the things in your technique and in your game that are firing on all cylinders when you're playing at your best?
I think for me, it's just getting to my spots quickly and not overdoing it with my movement. I've got a big frame. I can stay in the net. I don't need to fly around the crease too much. Calm, cool, and collected is kind of my game, and As long as I'm seeing the puck and reading the play well, I think that's where I have success. So I don't need to do anything too fancy out there. If there's a wild play that develops and I need to show off some athleticism, I've kind of got that in my toolbox if I need to. But for the most part, I like to keep it in the frame, in the blue paint, and rely on my reads and my big frame and get the job done that way.
Expecting an incredible sellout crowd, a really loud crowd and audience of great fan base here in Coachella Valley. Are you pretty jazzed up for game three, first home game in the playoffs so far this year?
I was here for the playoffs, part of the playoffs last season, and let me tell you, there's nothing like Coachella Valley Firebirds when fans, when Acushur Arena gets going, there's nothing like it. So they're going to bring the noise. I know they will. They always do, even through the regular season. But that playoff atmosphere is—I know they ramp it up a notch. So I think I'm looking forward to it for sure. I know the rest of the team's looking forward to it, and it's going to be a heck of a game tomorrow.
Fans will bring the noise, and you guys will bring the great play. Chris, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it.
In all my years in the game of hockey, the one thing that continues to be truth above all else is that if you do not get consistently great goaltending, it is going to be extremely difficult and near impossible to win a championship. Whether it's the Stanley Cup in the National Hockey League or a Calder Cup in the American League, Chris Drieger has been outstanding this year. And as we transition from a current goaltender to a Hall of Fame goaltender, who also happens to share the first name of the best producer in all of producing,
I think that's the number one accolade right there. You've nailed it.
Well, he is a legend in the game of hockey, and we are honored to have Grant Fuhr on the Signals from the Deep podcast. After all the great comments from the players, we now shift to a great broadcaster in our conversation now with Grant Fuhr. Grant Fuhr, thank you so much for joining me today.
No, it's my pleasure.
So, Grant, I was really excited to have you on this podcast. And anytime I have someone new on that is involved in hockey, a fan of hockey or a player, I got to start off by asking, where did your love and your passion for the game of hockey begin?
Oh, mine started a long time ago. How's that? So, now, my dad played a little bit, so about the age of four, I kind of fell in love with the game, and I still love the game. I still love being at the rink. I still love hanging out, so it hasn't changed much.
Yeah, and you mentioned your dad, your parents. How big of a role did they play in your life, and obviously the passion for the game, but also their importance?
You know what? They dragged me around everywhere that I wanted to go. They allowed me to play as much sport as I wanted, so they obviously had a big part of what I did. So, I mean, the 5 a.m. practice, mm-hmm. drag you to practice, drag you to school after that, pick you up from school, drag you back to the rink. So, I mean, without their help, I don't get to where I was.
Any other sports did you play growing up?
A little baseball, a little mm-hmm. football.
Yeah.
So it was 7 days a week. We were doing something.
Yeah. I've always been such a big believer in young kids and young people playing multiple sports to help with different motor skills, involved with different types of people. Do you think there's an importance to that? Do you think that playing other sports helped your goaltending at all?
Oh, most definitely. Yeah. I mean, I was a catcher in baseball. I was running back in football. And playing multiple sports makes you a better athlete, I think, because you're more rounded. I mean, you look at the kids now that are one sport, they end up getting burnt out.
Yeah.
So I think you play multiple sports. One, it keeps you fresh in all the sports. And you look forward to each sport different times a year, and it gives your brain a chance to reset itself a little bit.
And stay busy year-round.
And you still stay busy.
Exactly right. How about role models when you were younger? Obviously, you mentioned your parents, but was there anybody else that had an incredible impact on you? And we're going to get into your career in a little bit, and maybe this is a question for a little bit later down the line too, but anybody other than your parents that really had a great impact on your life?
You know what? I get to meet Glenn Hall when I was young.
Mm-hmm.
Glenn lived about 3 miles from us, so I got a chance to spend a lot of time with him, and obviously getting to watch him, watching all the goalies. Mm-hmm. I was a big Tony Esposito fan. Yeah. So anytime you get to see guys like that, you get a chance to talk to him a little bit, it's kind of hard not to be a fan.
Exactly right, especially when you get a chance to meet him and be able to interact with some of your heroes. It's an incredible thing. As you got a little bit older, the Western Hockey League, play 2 years with the Victoria Cougars, where you won a league championship and a trip to the Memorial Cup final. What was your junior hockey experience like?
It was great. I mean, leaving home at 15 obviously was a little bit different, but at the same time, if you play hockey in Canada, 15, 16, you're leaving home to play juniors. So pretty fortunate. I had good host families and we had great hockey teams. I mean, the first year we lost in the Western Final in 7 games to Regina. The second year we managed to win in 7 games against Calgary. So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Then we flash forward a little bit more. Take me through June 10th, 1981, 8th overall selection to the Edmonton Oilers. What was the lead up to the draft? And what was that day like for you, pretty much accomplishing something that, well, other than winning the Stanley Cup and playing a game, is every young hockey player's dream?
The lead up was normal. I was playing baseball. So I played baseball right up until the day I flew to Montreal. And at that time, I had Frank Millen as an agent. And he said, well, you might as well come to Montreal. There's a couple of teams that might be interested. So flew out, roomed with Al McInnes, which was kind of cool.
He didn't take any slap shots on you in the room, did he?
No slap shots then. Okay, good. Unfortunately, at the Memorial Cup, he did. But no, none in the room. So we get a chance to bond a little bit and have some fun. And again, you're in Montreal. Do you expect to get drafted? Not really. I mean, especially for goalies at that time. You figure maybe second, third round if you're lucky. So to go 8th overall was a bit of a shock, especially to go to Edmonton.
Right.
When you got drafted, is that the point that you had decided that hockey was going to be your career versus any of the other sports where you're playing? Or did you make that decision before then?
Oh, no, I had that decision made a long time ago.
Okay.
And I have a lot of teachers that will tell you I made that decision a long time beforehand. We were the bad student.
Gotcha.
So... Now, hockey was the first love.
There you go.
The other sports, I enjoyed playing them and had fun playing them, but hockey was the first love.
Yeah. And I would say usually you play multiple sports till 13, 14, and then you kind of got to make a decision. At least now, like I look at myself, I played a little bit of baseball when I was younger, and some other players that I know, maybe I don't really see players that want to have a career in professional hockey playing other sports past 15 years old.
Yeah.
Because then it kind of starts to get to be more training for hockey in the summer and then hockey in the wintertime.
Nope. Hockey ended. I was right into baseball.
Yeah.
Right up until I got summoned to Glenn Sather's office where he reminded me that he wasn't paying me to play baseball. So I got played right till I was about 24.
That's incredible. Wow. So how about those years with the Edmonton Oilers? 10 years. From 1983 to 88, you were paired up with Andy Moog and Billy Ranford, which really those two pairings and tandems with you and each of those gentlemen were really some of the most formidable goalie tandems ever, where you had 4 cups in 5 years. What was that run with the Oilers like for you and being able to play alongside some of the greatest players ever? But even more importantly for this question, being able to have that tandem with a couple of those other goaltenders.
Well, I think the great thing about playing at Edmonton is my first year I had Ronnie Lowe. So you want to learn from a veteran guy. Ronnie'd been around the league for a little while, and we were roommates as well. So that helped my first year to get my feet wet, get comfortable, and I'd played junior against Andy. So to have him as a partner the next year and for the next, 6, 7 years, I think was great. Between the two of us, you pushed each other, and you knew we were going to play equal time during the season. So the fact that we managed to play equal time and we pushed each other made us both better.
Yeah. Yeah. And is that one of those things where you guys had kind of an understanding as far as the relationship and kind of knowing who was going to play when? Because obviously nowadays, goalie tandems, you look in Boston where it's Jeremy Swayman and Linus Allmark, and you really never know who's going to play. But then on other goaltenders, there's... the kind of the clear starter, the clear backup. What was that kind of tandem like for you back in the day?
You know what? You knew you had to play good to be able to play. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the fun part of it. But at the same time, you never found out till the day of the game.
Yeah.
And there was no getting to prep for 2 or 3 days. Morning of, you go through the morning skate, and then Glenn would let you know at the morning skate who was going to play.
Right.
So you both prepared, and he wanted us both to prepare. And I think in the long run, it made us better because you not knowing, you prepared anyway.
Speaking of preparing, hockey players are known to be creatures of habit. Were there any specific or special routines? I know some people don't like the word superstition, so I'll maybe leave that one out. But anything that you like to do, specific way you wanted to put on your equipment or drive to the rink or certain things you wanted to eat, anything you had in your career?
No, I actually just threw the gear on and played.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that was the fun part. If I got new gear, I like to pull it out of the box and wear it in the morning skate and then wear it that night.
Yeah.
That's about as crazy as any superstitions got. Every now and then I might throw a little Mountain Dew in a water bottle just because.
When you look at, you know, you said you were able to play with some players that you'd played against and some other things like that. Growing up, were there players, goalies specifically, that you looked at that kind of inspired you to get into playing a goaltender? Because it's not a position I would say a lot of you see a lot of kids are like, oh, I want to be the goalie.
You know what? I'm that weird guy that wanted to be the goalie from day one. So okay. I thought the equipment looked cool and nobody else wanted to do it.
There
and
you get
to play all the time because multiple teams needed goalies, mm-hmm. and they weren't so age-specific at that time. So you could play with kids your own age. You could play with kids that were 3 or 4 years older than you were. And 7 nights a week, you could be a goalie, and everybody wanted you. So it for me, it turned out to be the perfect spot.
There you go.
Did you always, before you got into goalie, did you ever try and be a player, or was it always just kind of goalie from the start?
Goalie from 4 years on.
Yeah, wow.
So day one, put the gear on, and yeah. up until I replaced the knees here 5 or 6 years ago, still put the gear on.
Yeah.
Wow.
You had some incredible years. What were the glory days of the 1980s like for you?
For me, a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we all had a lot of fun. You get to play with some of the best players in the world, and we enjoyed our time together. We had fun. I think that was the biggest thing, and I think that's kind of lost in the game today is our guys had a lot of fun, and they enjoyed being together, and it certainly helps you when you're winning.
Mm-hmm. And how about the dynamic in those locker rooms where you've got Gretzky and Messier and Curry and Fuhr and just what was the dynamic like? Was it kind of everyone had a voice and you guys just kind of would say more times than not, you kind of knew you were going to win, the swagger and confidence?
We expected to win. How's
yeah,
that?
Yeah.
And Glenn instilled that in us.
Yeah.
I mean, right from my first couple of years there was an expectation of winning. And Glenn basically told us that you're going to grow up together, you're going to be together, and to enjoy that, you want to win. So we wanted to win every night. We may have had more fun than a lot of teams, booing the other team's power play, that sort of thing from the bench. All but right. at the same time, we had a good time doing it, but we were also focused on winning.
Mm-hmm. From a goalie's point of view, from a player point of view, or even just life, you've had so much success. What did you, when you look back at all the championships you won, 5 cups, what makes a winner? Like, what does it take to win a Stanley Cup in the National Hockey League?
I think the biggest thing is you got to be focused. I mean, yeah, you kind of sacrifice things around you a little bit, but at the same time, there's nothing better than winning. So you get in that. Edmonton had a good culture of winning. And with us, the Eskimos, I think they won 5 Grey Cups in a row around that time. So the whole city was kind of based on winning, hence the City of Champions.
Yeah.
So to be around that as a kid was awesome. And it's part of the culture that you stick with, and it sticks with you. Is if you're going to do something, you want to do it, and you want to be successful at it. So there's no sense kind of half-assing it.
Right, right. And one thing I've gotten a good sense of is that the fan base here in Coachella Valley is pretty incredible, and we're going to dive into that in a little bit. But how about the fans in Edmonton? I would assume you guys kind of ran the city and you guys were the legends in town. But what was that support and that fan base like there in the 80s?
You know what was fabulous? For me, being from there was even better.
Yeah.
I mean, other than my second year when I stuck my foot in my mouth. But once we got past that, yeah. then no, the fans there live, breathe, and die hockey. I mean, hockey comes first and foremost, and they have expectations. And part of that is because we were successful, and teams that have come along since then have realized that there's an expectation, and people want to know what's going on in your life. They want to know what's going on in your business if you're not winning hockey games.
Yeah, yeah. How about the Hockey Hall of Fame induction in 2003? What did that mean to you to be inducted into such an incredible Hall of Fame?
You know what? It's the whipped cream on top of everything else. I mean, you win championships and everything as a team, whereas the Hall of Fame is just kind of the whipped cream that goes on top of everything you've done over the course of your career. Yeah, you've won. Yeah, you've been successful. But to have your peers recognize that, I think that's the biggest thing.
Kind of like whipped cream on top of a milkshake, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, we're going to get into that. Trust me.
We may bring up the odd milkshake here.
Where were you when you got the call?
Driving home from the golf course.
Wow.
No surprise, golf course. But yeah, no, I just finished playing golf at Mayfair in Edmonton and was driving home and Mr. Gregory phoned.
And did you, who was your first call after you got that that call that you're going to be in the Hall of Fame?
Who did I call first? Probably my mom. Mm. And then a bunch of friends. Yeah. And we may have gotten together and had a small party. But no, it was a pretty special day.
Yeah.
So you mentioned a little bit, you know, the expectations and of the fan base in Edmonton. Does that translate to pressure, you know, when you're playing in a town like that versus maybe, you know, you have some other kind of non-traditional hockey markets where they may not have that same kind of media scrutiny? Is it something you thrive on, or is it something that kind of, I don't know, pressure is, I think, is a good word for it.
You know, some guys kind of fold under it, mm-hmm. and some guys kind of look at it as a chance to be successful.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, there's accountability to it, which I think the people that are driven will always be successful under that kind of a weight or a window or whichever way you want to look at it. Mm-hmm. But it's the opportunity to be successful. Right. And you go to a non-traditional market where there's not that same pressure. Now you've got to find a different way to find it.
Right.
And I know coaching in Phoenix, it was once the guys left the rink, there was nothing. And you're just another person. And yeah, that can be good at times for certain guys, but I didn't mind everybody wanting to know and wanting you to win. I think that was, that pushes you and it reminds you every day that you have to be good.
Right.
You can't mention Edmonton Oiler hockey history or hockey history without the likes of your name and the name of Wayne Gretzky as well. I had the honor of working in the TNT studio crew behind the scenes for a couple of years and Wayne still is working in studio there. But you played throughout the course of your career on three different teams with Wayne, Edmonton, LA, and St. Louis. And he has said many times, and I've heard this around the studio back when I was working there, and it's been out there in the media that he thinks you're the greatest goaltender of all time. When you hear that coming from him, a good friend of yours, what does that mean to you?
You know what? It means a lot. I mean, obviously, having him as a friend in your back pocket is not a bad thing. So, no, I mean, when your teammates have good things to say about you, you're doing something right. And I think as a goaltender especially, you want to do your job, but you also want to do a job that, at the end of the day, people look back and say, okay, he's a part of that. And in Edmonton, we were pretty fortunate. And yeah, we had six of the greatest players in the game, but everybody had a certain role to do and everybody knew what their role was. And if you didn't fit in, they got rid of you right away. So we all figured out what our place and time was and what we needed to do to be successful.
I could only imagine what those practices were like. What was it like going up against those guys? You know, you're trying to stop pucks from some of the greatest players ever. Now we know ever, and back then some of the greatest players at that time. So going up against those guys, I'm sure that the challenge was at the utmost every single day.
Oh yeah, and it was awesome. I mean, we were a team that liked to score. So we played fast, we played loose. There wasn't an emphasis on defense. Practices were the same. There was not an emphasis on defense. They wanted to score, and a lot of the drills were geared towards, if they scored, the goalies had to skate. If they didn't score, they had to skate.
Right.
So there's competition within the competition, and it made all of us better. And I hated skating. So.
And then lastly, on Wayne Gretzky specifically, the one thing I've gotten to know and having the honor of being around him as much as I have from time to time is he's one hell of a storyteller. Was he as good at telling stories back then in those days as he is now?
Oh, yeah, and the nicest guy in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the one thing people don't realize is what a nice man he is. And as a young guy going to the hockey club, he wanted everybody to feel comfortable.
Right.
And went out of his way to do that, which, again, kind of it built the camaraderie in our team as everybody went out of their way to make sure that the new guys that came in fit in and felt comfortable.
Right. In your eyes, aside from just being a great player, and for those that don't know, you take away all of Wayne Gretzky's goals, assists wise, he still has the most points in NHL history, which is just the most mind blowing stat ever, but goes to show how great he was. As a goaltender that faced him as much as you did in practice and were around him, what made him so great?
He just saw the game steps ahead of everybody else. It's not about where the puck is, it's about where the puck's going and where you want the puck to go. So you practice against guys like that every day, you learn to read the game better. And for me as a goalie, it was great to practice against them because they wanted to score, I wanted to stop them. So now you start to see the game the way they see the game, and it does nothing but help you read the game and make you look faster than you actually are.
I'm sure the chemistry was great, as you're alluding to, but was there a lot of competition on those teams, like the internal competition was through the roof?
We competed against each other. There was no question. After practice, we could sit there for 45 minutes playing little games, whether it be for lunch, maybe a cold beverage. there was a lot of fun had.
Yeah. Well, in doing some research using NHL.com, I've got a couple of records of yours here that I'd love to get some insight on. Most assists and points by a goaltender in the regular season and playoffs combined, it's 61. Was that a part of your game, trying to get assists? Like, obviously, it's so obvious that a goaltender, you're there to stop the puck. But did you have that kind of mindset and mentality of, if I can move the puck or get it to a forward quicker, maybe try and spring the breakout, that's what you're going to try and do?
That was part of the learning process. Our guys, when we came back in our end, didn't want to stop. They're circling, they're going to certain areas, so you learn to try and get the rebounds into those areas. So the more pucks I can get in the traffic pattern, the faster we could break out. It turns out the more points you get.
It sounds so easy. Longest undefeated streak in NHL history, 23 games in the year 1981-82. Do you remember that? Can you take me through what that was like, where I'm sure it's like, doesn't matter what can happen on a day-to-day basis, you just know you're going to win.
Well, I know I lost my first game, and I know to break the streak, I lost on Hockey Night in Canada. So I remember those two things. During the streak, not as much.
Yeah.
But the start of the streak started right after we lost to Winnipeg. And then we lost in Toronto. I think it was 7-1 or something silly. Mm-hmm. 10 the streak.
Yeah.
So in between, that was okay.
Just okay. We'll put it that way. One that I'm going to mention, but you already kind of answered, but most assists by a goalie in a season, 14. I mean, just absolutely incredible. And there's a guy who plays the puck pretty darn well in the Kraken organization, who you've seen a lot.
I would say he's a pretty good puck
handler. Joey Decord, the mayor of Coachella Valley, the mayor of Seattle. So I think at this point I'd love to ask you, when you watch him play the puck, what do you think it is that he does so well to be so effective, as I think he is, if not the best, one of the best puck handling and puck moving goaltenders in all of pro hockey?
Oh, most definitely. He's probably one of the best I've seen in all the years I've been around the game. And Joey reads the game so well. I think that's the biggest thing that makes him such a good puck handler. You look at when Marty Brodeur was handling the puck and they had to change the rules. Joey's an offshoot of that, where he's smart enough with the puck that he moves it like a defenseman. He sees the game like a defenseman. But at the same time, he's an extremely good goaltender. So for the opposition to come in and have to dump a puck into the zone, they have to think about it. They have to be smarter. It changes the way they attack.
Do you anticipate, and I think it's going to happen sooner rather than later, do you think Joey Decord is going to be one of the next goalies that scores a goal?
I'd be shocked if he didn't. How's that?
There you go. All right, cool.
And it would happen sooner if they got rid of the trapezoid. Trapezoid's my pet peeve.
Yeah. You got more opinions on it?
The trapezoid?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a waste.
I mean, tell me why.
They wanted to create offense. So if you're going to create offense, who makes the most mistakes with the puck in behind the net? Goaltender.
Yeah.
So what do? You allow them to go behind the net, but you don't allow them to go in the corners where they're going to make a bigger mistake. Mm-hmm. So it kind of kills the offense. You set up the defenseman to get run all the time because, oh, guess what? Goalie can't come out and handle a puck. Mm-hmm. So as the goalies got better and learned the position and learned to handle a puck, now you handicap them. So, yeah, small pet peeve.
Yeah.
I've heard the idea of the reverse trapezoid, where they can only play it in the corners and they're not allowed to play it behind the net. Do you think that would...
I'd like to see them just get rid of it altogether.
No, just no trapezoid. Okay.
Now, let them play it wherever they want, because if a good forechecking team, you want the goalie handling the puck more than the defenseman, the goalie's going to make a bigger mistake. Mm-hmm. So to create offense, I think if you get rid of the trapezoid, it's going to help teams offensively.
Well, and as somebody who prefers a puck handling goalie, I mean, yes, let's do it. I'm all in.
And I'll tell you who really appreciates a puck handling goalie is the defenseman.
Because
you got a third defenseman back there pretty much.
Well, it saves you getting run. You don't have your face stuck in the glass all the time. Yeah, so there's a lot of happy defensemen when you go handle a puck.
And I'll tell you what, equally as happy forwards at times, because when you got a guy like that that can make a 70, 80-foot pass to expedite the breakout, man, oh, man, you get these. And for Joey, there were a lot of cases this year where Joey, as you had said, Grant, reading the play, recognizes the opposition's going for a change, and he's able to get in behind, make a quick up play, or maybe if the puck isn't even behind the net, it's just kind of trickling out in front of him, he's able to make that quick play, and boom, you got a two-on-one, maybe even a breakaway in some instances.
Yeah, well, your forwards realize that, and you'll have one guy stay a little high on the opposite side of the rink, and it forces teams to be more careful changing. So I think it's a great thing that a goalie can handle a puck, and yeah, it's a shame they handcuffed him, but at the same time, as goalies get better, they seem to try and find ways to offset that.
I'm sure there's a suggestion box we could drop a little flyer in and say no more trapezoid, please.
Oh, I've thrown that out. It's not a big flyer.
Well, I think the greatest ability in sports is availability, and you prove that throughout your career. A couple more records. Most games played in a season as a goaltender in 1995-96. 79 games.
Okay, he's an old guy.
Like... That is not only unheard of, but it's kind of crazy to believe. And then the most consecutive appearances by a goalie in 96 with 76 straight games appeared in. So what was that year like for you? What were you eating? What was in the water? Like that, to me, that's mind-blowing. Obviously, now the game has changed. But when you look back at that, I mean, that's got to be a real source of pride for you, having been able to play that much and that consistently.
You know what? It's a mindset. I enjoyed playing. You prepare to play every day, so why not play every day? I mean, Mike Keenan was nice enough to let me play every day. And then that year in the playoffs, I wrecked a knee and came back after getting it fixed and played 73, which I think was more of a feat than the 79. So, but no, you look at Glenn Hall, he played 503.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there at 79 going, huh, another six or seven seasons of this will be good.
Yeah.
But right. No, it's fun to play a lot. And Glenn Sather let me do it the 1 year in Edmonton, I think 87-ish. I played 75, plus Canada Cup, plus playoffs, so about 103 or 4 total, and enjoyed every minute of it. So it's a mindset, but it's fun to do.
And as someone who's done it at the high level, what do you think is the key to managing the highs and the lows? Aside from just staying even keel and it being a mindset, was there anything you would do? Because I guess as human nature, sometimes you kind of, you get a little high, you get a little low, but was it kind of like a recorrecting of it for you when you realized that maybe it was going one way or the other?
Well, I used to look at it as, doesn't matter what happens in the game, once you go to bed, it's over. When you get up in the morning, it's a new day, the day starts over again, and you prepare, you go through that day, and once that day's over, as soon as you close your eyes, go to sleep, the next day starts, and it allows you to stay on an even keel.
Mm-hmm. Read a quote on the internet. This is how it goes.
Uh-oh.
I've always been a relaxed guy. It's a good temperament to have as a goalie. Do you know who said that?
I might have said that.
That was you. Yeah, that was you. So I'd love to know that relaxedness that you have and the calmness. First off, where does that come from? And second, how do you think it helped you along in your Hall of Fame career?
Well, I think the biggest part of that is the more relaxed you are, the easier it is to play. Mm-hmm. I mean, for anybody that's played sports at a high level, the more intense you get, one, the higher the highs are, the lower the lows are. So the more you can keep the world a little more flatlined, the easier it is to play the game. And you treat each game like, if I gave up a goal, you fish the puck out of the net, you start over. There's nothing you can do about it, so there's no sense worrying about it.
The goalies these days that are playing kind of one day on, one day off, you know, you're really seeing a tandem with teams versus, you know, 79 games a year. How hard is it to kind of keep that even keel mindset, do you think, for them versus when you were playing?
Well, I think you still have to keep the same mindset. Mm-hmm. I mean, for us back then, we traveled commercial, whereas now you're chartering. So it's should be easier by retrospect.
Sure.
But at the same time, it's the ups and downs. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody's going to go through the ups and downs. It's realizing in the downs, what did you do when you were playing well? Okay. And whether it's sitting back and looking at an old tape or, yes, I'm old. I had to look at tape.
Not so. Old, just wise. Just wise, experienced.
Veteran.
Yes, exactly right.
But you take a look at what you do well, and when goalies struggle, they have a tendency to want to get closer to the net. and all of a sudden the net opens up. Whereas when you're playing well, you're always out, you're aggressive, and it's a matter of realizing that and trying to convince yourself of that.
Right. Get back out on the edge kind of thing.
So, yeah, in actuality, you want to be out further and more aggressive, but natural instinct is to get closer to the net, so you end up handicapping yourself.
Right. And you look smaller, and from a shooter's point of view, especially on like a shootout or a breakaway situation, is that when the goalie's heels are on the goal line, there's a lot more net to shoot at, right? And when you're at the top of your crease.
That's why I wish we'd had the shootout.
Yeah.
We used to have a ball with that in practice because it's a game of patience. Right. Right. The longer I can stand in one spot, the harder it is for a forward. You have to commit at some point. Mm-hmm. I don't have to commit till you commit. Mm-hmm. Right. But it's hard to teach guys that because your instinct is you want to do something.
Right.
To stand there and do nothing's hard.
Mm-hmm. When you look back, how would you describe your goaltending style, and how did it evolve as your career went on?
It was probably a little helter-skelter to start. Yeah. I mean, I relied on reflexes. I'm not a big goalie. I think I'm 5'10 on a really good day. 5'10 when I had hair. Now we're about 5'9. So as you learn the game, you get yourself in better position. But I've always had the reflexes I could fall back on. But the goal is to make it look easy. And my first few years, I could get away with being positionally bad just because of reflexes. But as I got older, you slow down a little bit, then you've got to get in better position. And it still looks like you're fast because you're now in a better position.
Right. Goaltenders, I'm sure you've watched a lot of hockey in your life. Were there goaltenders now or in recent memory that you really enjoy watching?
Carey Price was a good one. Mm-hmm. I like watching Carey Price. Vasilevsky is obviously really good. Shesterkin's good. I mean, there's some of the young guys now are really good. Mm-hmm. But I'm enjoying watching the guys in the American leagues. You're watching the guys that are coming up, watching them develop, and just seeing their highs and lows and seeing what they do well.
And you mentioned your size not being the now Andre Vasilevskys of the world.
We're not 6'6". So.
Where you're 6'6", but you could move like a gymnast and to be able to do the splits and these make these incredible saves. But how about a guy like UC Saros in Nashville who is under 6 foot or just a little bit under?
And phenomenal.
And absolutely phenomenal. So, you know, that has to at least provide some hope for goaltenders that aren't 6'5", right?
Oh, yeah. Well, take a look at Dustin Wolf in Calgary. He's not a big goalie. Mm-hmm. But you create the optical illusion of being big. And, again, it's that being more aggressive, which when you were playing against Dustin, you want to box him into his crease because small goalies have a harder time. But at the same time, if you're smaller and you're more aggressive, you look bigger.
Right.
And that's, you want to create that option.
And when you talk about other goaltenders, it reminds me of when you were a goaltending coach in the National Hockey League. Can you take me through what that was like for you?
I enjoyed it. Yeah. I mean, I still enjoy the position. Mm-hmm. And you forever learn. I think that's the great thing is you're always learning. You're always watching to learn. And you try to see what the modern day guy does. And yeah, it's changed because of equipment. So now you go down, guys don't mind taking a puck off the chest. Right. Mid-80s, you're not really happy if somebody hits you in the chest.
Sternum's going to be hurting.
Yeah, you end up purple till about halfway through July. So, but no, just to see how the game's changed. I mean, a lot of the teams now play what we did in the 80s, where they want to play that run and gun. And it's a matter of watching the goalie, see how they read that, and see how they read the game. I still enjoy watching that, and you still learn.
Yeah. And stops in Calgary and Phoenix with the Coyotes. Specifically, any goaltenders there that you worked with that either went on to have long careers or guys that you really enjoyed working with goalie-wise?
Actually, all the goalies were good.
Yeah.
I mean, in Calgary, what did we have? We had Jamie McLennan was there for a bit, yeah. Freddie Brathwaite. Freddie I hadn't played with, but Jamie I played with.
Yeah.
They brought Vernie back. Mm-hmm. So Vernie and I played junior against each other. I'd known him for a long time. Phoenix, we had Michael Telquist, David Lenovo, who else? David Abisher, mm-hmm. brought in for a little while, Ilya Brizgalov.
Yeah.
So lots of different types of goalies. Mm-hmm. So it's a matter of learning what they do best and helping them understand what they do best.
Yeah. From the playing mindset that you had to then being able to communicate your knowledge, did that come naturally to you when you made the transition from playing into goaltending coaching, or was it something that you kind of had to work on? What was that transition like to go from playing the position yourself to then trying to help someone else learn how to take their skills to the next level?
I think the biggest difference was by that point, you've seen almost everything. Yeah. It's what you see and what they see, and how do you make it similar? I think that's the biggest thing. And you can help them read the game, which is probably the biggest difference between the American League, the National Hockey League, is the way guys read the game and at the speed they read the game.
You know, after working with these other goaltenders, you know, as you were coaching, is there anything that you would say that you would do differently if you were playing the game today?
No, I like the way I played the game.
Okay.
I played to have fun and enjoy it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't life or death. And if you treat it like that, I mean, yeah, a little more knowledge wouldn't hurt when I started. But at the same time, that's all part of learning the game is, right. I mean, I was pretty fortunate. I get picked. Glenn Hall's brain a few times to say, okay, if I do this, what happens? And from his perspective, he could say, okay, well, I did that. This is what would happen. And you can experiment and practice and try it and see what you get out of it. And if it's comfortable, you drag it to a game. And when I played, I said, as long as I can add something every year, I'll play for a long time. So every year you're trying to add something.
One of the great honors you can have as a hockey player is to have your number retired. And back on October 9th, 2003, Edmonton Oilers retired your famous number 31. Similarly to the Hall of Fame call, when you were notified that the Oilers were going to retire your number, and then that night, what did that mean to you, and how did you celebrate that incredible occasion?
You know what? It's always pretty cool. It's not something you ever expect. I think that was the biggest thing. And had a lot of company already hanging up there. So that makes it a lot of fun as well. But at the same time, family, friends, all that, get to throw the gear on one last time. That's always fun until you realize how heavy it was and how miserable it was to be in it. But no, we had a really good time, and I got together with a bunch of friends afterwards, and we may have painted the town red for a little while.
Sure.
As you should.
When just a little bit.
Have an incredible honor like that. I'd love to get into now something that I think is extremely important. And something that we are seeing more and more of now. It's been very much known that you were the first black hockey player to win the Stanley Cup and to be inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame. When you hear things like that, how does it make you feel? And with where the current climate is of more and more black hockey players, not just making it to the NHL, but people wanting to play the game at whatever level, younger or older. When you think about all of those things, what comes to mind?
Progress. Yeah. I think that's the biggest thing is you want to see progress in the game. You want to see the NHL made the big pitch that hockey is for everyone. And then when they do that, they have a tendency to step on their foot. Whereas you'd like to see the game grow and grow and grow. And I mean, I'm pretty fortunate. I got to follow Willie. I got to follow Tony McKegney, Mike Marson, Bill Riley. I mean, we had Billy in training camp, 82-ish. So I got a chance to talk to him a little bit. You see the progression. And going down the line, I'm just part of that progression. But at the same time, you want the game to grow and you want to be a part of that game. And we're talking to a group right now at TSU. Just Tennessee State's going to go D1. Mm-hmm. And it's a predominantly black school. So the fact that they think they can recruit enough kids and have a good enough team to play D1 says a lot for how the game's growing. And that's what you want to leave. That's your lasting legacy is how does the game grow and can you be a part of that?
You mentioned the name Willie O'Ree. What does he mean to you and what it means to be a current or a former black hockey player in the National Hockey League?
You look at Willie. Willie broke the barrier for everybody. Willie and Herb Carnegie. So the fact somebody had to do it. And I've had the pleasure of sitting down and talking to Willie and hanging out with Willie. And such a good man.
Yeah.
And to hear some of the stories that they went through, guys like Val James. They played a ton of games in the American Hockey League that things weren't as cheerful and as nice as they were by the time I played. And I mean, I got pretty lucky. I played with five or six of the greatest players in the game who were going to soak up all the limelight so I could just play. And you wore a mask. That was the other thing. Right. So I probably had it a little easier than most. But at the same time, you realize that you're carrying on a legacy that they've created. So you're just a part of their legacy, and the longer you can drag it along, the better. And if guys behind you come in and they want to continue it, then the game grows, and that's what you want to see.
And you think about some players that have had incredible careers both on and off the ice. guys like George Larocq and one of my favorite players of all time, Jerome Iginla.
He was my bat boy when I played baseball. I played really? For, I played for his grandfather.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Incredible.
That's how long I've known him.
And we think of players in more recent memory, PK Subban, who's now doing a great job at ESPN, and right now Quentin Byfield taking the league by storm. So as you see these players continue to make an impact, I'm sure that's got to make you feel really great as well.
It does.
Yeah.
It shows that the game's growing. It is available for everybody to play, and that's what you want to see. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the end of the day, that's your legacy, is the more kids that play, the more that get involved, the better life is, the better for them it is.
As far as good life and growing the game, everyone's doing a pretty damn good job of that down here in Palm Springs and Palm Desert.
It's grown fast,
hasn't
it? With
the Coachella Valley Firebirds. So I got to ask, how the heck did you end up down here?
My wife's from here.
Mm.
And it's golf heaven. So the fact that the last couple of years they sprinkled a little hockey in for me is just an added bonus.
Yeah.
But no, life here is pretty good. And the fact that everybody in the Valley has picked up the game of hockey and have taken a love to it, I think that's, I really enjoy that. And it's fun to talk to the people. And it used to be you never heard about hockey down here. Now you go to the grocery store, people want to talk hockey.
Right.
So it's actually a lot of fun. And you couldn't ask for a better place.
Right. And a lot of it has to do with your great work with the One Valley Foundation as the president. So what is it like to be part of that and to help continue to grow the game and teach people about, in my opinion, and I'm sure your opinion, the greatest sport in the entire world?
Well, it's definitely the greatest sport in the world. But the fact that here, being the president of the One Valley Foundation and all the good work that Andrew does and the guys in the foundation, is it's leaving a legacy here in the Valley and making it better for kids. And I think that's the biggest thing, whether it's through education, through hockey. I mean, anything that we can do to make any of the nine cities better and give the kids a better life leaves a legacy, and it's a great legacy for the hockey club.
Yeah.
Do you see the Firebirds, and especially, you know, here at Acrisure, the Bergen Iceplex as well, do you see that as a catalyst of seeing, you know, maybe more rinks open up, more youth hockey programs, maybe even getting into like school programs as well?
Oh, most definitely. I mean, I've talked to three or four schools already that want to put rinks in. Mm-hmm. So my guess is there'll be roller hockey rinks to start. Yeah. And I know we had a screening of my doc to raise a bunch of money to put roller rinks in. So it's about getting the kids involved, and the best way to get them involved is get a stick in their hands, whether it be street hockey, roller hockey, ball hockey, anything. Just get them into the building. That's the biggest key, is they see a game live and you fall in love with it.
That's exactly what happened when I was a kid. You know, the Avalanche came to Denver. I grew up in Denver, and seeing all of a sudden everybody's playing street hockey, everybody's playing in gym, and it's just, I think the presence of a team helps more than anybody really realizes. So,
oh, most definitely. And they've done a great job here about getting the guys out in the community, getting them to talk to the kids. And the foundation's doing a great job of doing different things for the kids, where they're getting sticks in their hands, they're getting the chance to play a little bit. Right. And you can see the love of the game starting to show up here in a place where you wouldn't expect it.
I was very fortunate to be pretty much born with a stick in my hands. So though the game of hockey is very much in my blood and my soul, when I was growing up in Chicago in my early teenage years, that was the heyday of the Blackhawks from 2010 to 2016, where they won three cups in 6 years. And though Chicago's always been a hockey town, no question, but I really started to see that when you win and when you have community outreach and you get and improve accessibility to the game and the equipment, because that's the one thing that holds hockey back.
Price.
Is the cost of the equipment and the ice time and everything that goes into it and the travel. But I saw that when you're an organization that really cares about getting out in the community and trying to grow the game from the grassroots level, that makes the biggest difference. And you guys are doing an absolutely incredible job down here.
Well, you know what? It starts with the Kraken.
Yeah.
They're doing a great job in Seattle. Seattle's always been a bit of a hockey town. Mm-hmm. I mean, I played junior against Seattle for the longest time. I think they're the Breakers back then.
Yeah.
I'm that old. But you see the game grow there, and you see what they've done with the organization here, and the outreach that they've got here, and you watch the game grow, and it's fun to watch it grow. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's fun to sit and talk hockey with people.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how many people have a million questions. So you sit, you talk to them, you see some interesting questions, some that you would just think the answers are automatic,
right?
But they don't know. Mm-hmm. And that's probably the hardest part about doing some of the games here, is you've got two different fan bases. You've got the knowledgeable group, and then you've got the just beginners. And somewhere in there, you have to describe it so that somebody that doesn't know anything about it understands, but you don't insult the guys that actually have the knowledge of the game.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that I have found to be so fascinating for me, having an opportunity to broadcast for the Kraken, is that exact thing, Grant, of trying not to upset those who say, well, yeah, duh, of course that's icing, of course that's offsides, or that's the rule of goaltender interference that you can't plow them over, where some people might think that that's just the case. So,
well, we're still trying to learn the rule of goalie interference.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe not the best example.
There's a great gray area there.
Yeah, for sure. But it's an incredible, I would use the word responsibility, right? To it be is. Able to try and teach people, but also appease those who are the hardcore hockey fan and they're trying to learn maybe more about a 1-2-2 forecheck or what's going on in the defensive zone or what happened 30 seconds prior to the breakout that led to the rush chance and the goal, whatever the case may be. But, you know, that's the great honor and pleasure I have of doing in Seattle, just like you're doing down here in the desert.
Yeah, and that's the fun part of it is You're trying to grow the game, and at the same time, you're trying to keep the people that love the game involved in the game. So, one, it's a responsibility. Two, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. I was browsing around on your X page, which is so just kind of weird for me to say. It's kind of Twitter ingrained.
I was
going to
say,
I still
go by Twitter.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But I noticed that there's just as much content on there about golf as there is hockey.
Yeah, there might be a little golf content on there.
So, Grant, I got to know, where did your love of golf begin? And I know it's a part of your daily life now, but where does that passion come from?
You know what? When I couldn't play hockey in the summers, I liked to play golf. And seeing as how we got ruled out of baseball, we had to find something else to fill that time.
Right.
And I find golf relaxing. I mean, it's 4 hours of peace and quiet. And I enjoy being out in the quiet and playing the game, and I did that when I played. I mean, playoffs especially, off days were golf days. And Glenn Sather was good with it. Every team that I progressed to, they understood that on the off days, we're going to play golf. Mm-hmm. It's just the way it works.
Right.
So I like it because you're competing against the golf course. And it's something you can still compete at. And you can compete when you're 4, you can compete when you're 70. Mm-hmm. And it's the perfect game because you can never solve it.
Always new things coming up. So what do you think, if you were to analyze your golf game, what's the strength of when you're playing at your best? And how has maybe your golf game evolved over the years now that you've been playing for a good while?
Well, I think golf evolves with Father Time, mm-hmm. where you got to do things differently. It used to be a power game for me. Now it's more, you learn the golf course. It's about control, and you want to play out of the fairway. Moving down here, you had to learn that, oh, by the way, you hit it here, you get bit.
Yeah.
They have things that crawl around here that make noise. So
yeah, right.
Straight is a good thing.
Yeah.
But driving the golf ball is becoming an asset, which it never used to be. Mm-hmm. And putting's become an asset, which I don't know where that decided to show up, but it's actually showed up. Actually, the guys at Betton already hooked me up with a putter that kind of solved everything.
Okay, there you go.
So short game still has some demons once in a while.
Yeah.
We don't have goal scorers' hands.
How about the greatest player? Let's say, how about hockey player that you ever golfed with? Like, not greatest hockey player, but the hockey player that was like the best golfer. Like, wow, that guy can really play.
Brett Hull's pretty good.
Is he?
Danny Quinn was good. Mm-hmm. Right. Hockey's the one sport where there's a lot of really good players. Mm-hmm. And I know they're talking about having a championship in August where they're going to take 36 or 40 of the best hockey players to find out who's the best in the game.
Wow.
So we might compete in that.
I was going to say.
I might actually break that in practice
I'm
again.
I'm sensing, I can see you doing your golf swing right now. You're already practicing on it in your brain. That's awesome. As we kind of dovetail towards the end of the podcast here, I'd love to switch it and get your thoughts on the Firebirds. But before we do that, your step into the broadcasting world.
Yeah, I've kind of gone to the dark side.
What was the opportunity originally? What was the pull? And you wanting to get into being one of the voices of the Firebirds?
Well, when the team came to town, I was happy to do whatever they wanted. I mean, I like being around the rink. I like being around the game itself. And somebody threw out, well, would you do color? I'm like, oh, I guess I could. I swore I'd never be a media guy, but apparently that ended. Here so you are. Here
yeah.
I am.
Yeah.
But no, it's to sit and be able to talk about hockey every day is great. I mean, I enjoy the game. I enjoy being around the game. And at the fact we have a great group here, Evan's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I mean, you'll see that tomorrow night. He's fun to work with. Yeah. And we have a good time with it. And it just gives me that opportunity to still be around the game.
You mentioned Evan Pivnik, voice of the Firebirds, Gino Lamont, too. Mr. Tennyson as well coming in from...
Maddie's coming in tomorrow.
From time to time. What is it like working with those guys on a game-to-game basis?
I think it's great.
Yeah.
Gino is obviously a veteran in the TV market, so to work with him has been phenomenal. You learn a lot about the TV side of it, which stuff I wouldn't even think of. So I follow his lead in that, and apparently I'm supposed to know the hockey side of it. So that part of it, it works out well.
I think you got that down pretty good.
So for the both of us, it works out well.
Yeah,
I will text back and forth during hockey games. And if we're not working here, he sits and watch hockey at home every night. I still sit and watch all the playoff games. Once I hit the couch at 4 o'clock, I'm not moving until the last game's over. So that's just how playoffs work.
Yeah.
But so
now that you're doing the color commentary, has it changed the way that you watch the game? Are you watching with a more of an analytical mind? Or how does that differ now?
No, I still watch it from a goalie's perspective. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how I've grown up analyzing the game, is from the net out. And I still do that. And it's just a habit that you watch plays develop. You know where the puck's going to go. And when it doesn't go there, you're like, what is he doing?
So, and then it's just vocalizing that to the viewer.
It's how to explain that without saying anything that's going to get you fired really quickly.
Speaking of that transition from mind to voice, now being a broadcaster that you are, I want to try and get that in there as much as I can now. What was the hardest thing? Because, look, there have been some great hockey players that maybe have a hard time going from brain to mouth. So as you continue to learn, as you have gotten as good as you are at it, what is something that you've learned to be able to go from your motor skills and your reflexes that you had as a player to be able to vocalize that and teach that now as a broadcaster?
Well, I think the biggest thing is something you see right away, you actually have to think about for half a second as to how you're going to explain it. Mm-hmm. I mean, how I would normally just throw it out there, it probably doesn't fly on the air because it might be, they have rules against that now. So it's the what you see and how do you describe it to somebody that's not there. And yes, everybody in the building, you can see what's going on and such. But it's the people on the radio that can't see the game. So what you see, how do you describe that to make them understand what's happening?
Paint the picture.
And yeah. It's become the paint the picture.
Yeah.
And to see the game, it's easy.
Right.
But how do you paint that picture when you can't see it?
Right.
So Evan does a phenomenal job with play-by-play, and reading off of Evan is very easy.
Yeah. Evan also is a incredible tour guide through Acrisure Arena.
I heard you got the full meal deal.
He gave Grant and I one hell of a tour through the arena, and with it being my first time here, it's kind of like every...
Mine too.
Every time we turned, Grant, producer Grant, we turn around the corner, and it's like, wow, there's an incredible suite, or wow, there's the locker room with the player lounge and the medical room and the equipment room and the locker room and every kind of way we turned. So in all of the rinks that you've been in, Grant, Grant Fuhr, it's just like, yeah, Grant squared here. Which Grant am I talking to? So in all the rinks that you've been in and now having to be able to call this one home, where does it stack up? And I know it's different from NHL arenas, but it's pretty amazing what they've done here, right?
No, it's phenomenal what they've done here. Yeah. And to think when they first thought of the idea to build this building, you're like, okay, will it fly? Yeah, it'll probably fly. Will it bring hockey? Hopefully. Concerts, most definitely. Mm-hmm. But they've done a great job with the building. And it's got a great atmosphere in it, which is half of what you need in a building. I mean, you look at some of the new NHL rinks, and they're just big generic rinks. Whereas this one's got a little bit of character to it, and it... You'll see tomorrow night it's got the best milkshakes.
I can't wait. Extra whipped cream for me.
I mean, my initial thought is, you know, coming in here, it's a very thoughtful use of space, especially with having the Iceplex right next door, pretty much the same building. You want to compare it to Kraken Community Iceplex. You want to compare it to Climate Pledge Arena, obviously on a smaller scale, but I feel like it has a lot of the same touches and a lot of the personality that you would expect from a building here in Southern California.
Yeah, and the ownership group's done a great job of that, where between here and Seattle, there's not a whole lot of difference. They wanted this to be a first-class facility. They wanted it to feel like an NHL facility. Mm-hmm. And for the players, they've done that. And for the new fan coming in, you get a phenomenal building with no bad seats. I think that's the great part about it. There's no clock hanging in the middle, so nobody's got an obstructed view.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Keeping it up on the one end was a great idea because, one, it's good for concerts. Mm-hmm. So now you've got no unobstructed seats, and you've got great seats for hockey.
Pretty nice. Speaking of concerts, I mean, have you been to a show here?
Yeah, I've checked out a couple of shows here. We've got a couple more coming up that I'm going to check out. So it's phenomenal building for shows. It's just small and intimate enough that you get a really good perspective of the shows.
And Evan also gave us a tour of some of the artist rooms where the big old bands and worldwide global artists hang out. And
they didn't get cheated.
Those are some pretty comfortable spaces.
Very swanky,
where class is number one, number two, and number three on the scoreboard there. How about the fans, Grant, here in Coachella Valley? Made the trip from the airport in Palm Springs to get down here to Palm Desert. It's kind of like everywhere I looked, there was a Firebirds bumper sticker or a Firebirds flag or something in the window or something on the street. How have you seen the fans take to this team and this organization in year one and now this year?
You know what? It was a learning experience at the start, and it's just gotten better and better. And now it's the talk of the town. And yeah, last year it was the shiny new object. So you were like, okay, first year's going to be good. Everybody's kind of bought into it. Now you go to year two. Now you bring in different bodies. Everybody's used to seeing a veteran team. Now you get more young guys. And trying to explain that to the hockey fan, they've bought into it. They understand it. And to see they're still supporting it. And the guys feed off their energy. Mm-hmm. It's a loud crowd. And it's a fun crowd sometimes because they cheer some things you probably wouldn't normally cheer, which I think is entertaining. The first year was great because it didn't matter who got hit, whether it was our guys or the other team, they would cheer it.
Yeah.
So that was always fun. But no, it's becoming more knowledgeable, but they always bring a lot of energy. And I think that's great for the guys, but it's also fun to be in the building.
Instant success is an amazing thing with what the Firebirds were able to do last year within one goal of winning the Calder Cup, the American Hockey League version of the Stanley Cup. What do you think instant success does, not just for a team, but for the fans as well?
Well, I think the biggest thing is it creates expectations. And I think that's part of what the organization wanted. They wanted the expectations to be high. And you come off a first year that's one shot away from winning a Calder Cup. Well, everybody expected it this year. And it puts a lot of pressure on the guys, which I think is good, which allows a lot of our guys to be able to compete here, run right up into Seattle, and be able to compete and play there. But at the same time, it's great for the building. I mean, everybody's got expectations. Everybody's excited to be here. The fans have a great time. And you can see it sprinkling out throughout the community. And I think that's the biggest aspect of it is you can see it growing in the community. And that's what you want, especially long term.
Yeah. On the ice, when the Firebirds are playing at their very best, in your eyes and in your expert opinion, what are a couple of things that the team is doing extremely well when they're playing their best?
When they play the best hockey, they set the tone right away. They play with an urgency. They play at a very high tempo. And if you look back at any Dan Bylsma coach team, they've always played at a high tempo. Mm-hmm. And they forecheck extremely well, extremely hard. They can be physical. And they can play any type of game. They can play that close checking game. They can play the wide open game. And they've done a good job of that. Game one against Calgary, after 2 weeks off, we were probably a little bit flat. Game two started flat, and then you could see guys starting to get into it, and they took over the game, and it's what you expect from this team. I mean, we've seen some slow starts, but you also know that they've got another gear when they need it. Good hockey teams find ways to win games, and that's what they do.
Right. Was there anybody this year that really impressed you with how they played as far as the players go? We're going to get in the goalie in a second, but any players that really kind of wowed you as far as their progression goes as a player?
Max McCormick's been really good. Mm-hmm. And Cole Lynn had a phenomenal playoff last year, and he's continued that through the year this year. Mm-hmm. I think he was our leading scorer this year. So, I mean, you see guys, you want to get better, mm-hmm. and you want to see him compete every day. And we've been pretty fortunate. The guys have gotten better. Our young guys, the Jacob Melanson's, Tucker Robertson, guys like that, the kids are getting better every day. You look at a guy like Ville Ottavainen, who's come in and played big minutes and plus 20-something for a rookie. Mm-hmm. I mean, you see the rookies competing at the same level as the veterans. That's what you want to see. You want to see progression. And we know as Seattle gets more and more draft picks, we're going to get younger and younger here. But at the same time, you want to see the guys still have that conviction to winning.
Mm-hmm. Who do you see as the next big, I guess, call up for the Kraken? Not somebody who is going to stay up there, but probably somebody that you see kind of making that good transition back and forth.
I think you could see a guy like John Hayden go up and fill a role. Mm-hmm. You could see Logan Morrison's kind of the real big surprise. Mm-hmm. A little smaller guy, but plays with a lot of bite. He's going to be a good pro. You'll see him up there. You'll see Tucker Robertson will end up there. I'm sure Ottavainen's going to get a look up there. You guys got a chance to see Riker Evans for a little bit this year. Yeah. So we're pretty spoiled in that route. And the fans here have been spoiled in goaltending. Having Joey last year, having Chris Drieger this year, they've been spoiled by NHL goalies.
In terms of goalies, lastly for you here, Grant, what have you seen in Chris Drieger? Because it's been a tumultuous last couple of years for him. He tore his ACL last summer. Tough road to get back. Lot of rehab. Lot of strengthening. Lot of time in the gym and on the ice.
Lots of misery.
And here he goes this year, 24 wins during the regular season, a .226 goals against, a .917 save percentage, and he's been a real backbone of the spine of this team. So what have you seen from him this year and so far in the playoffs?
Drees is an NHL goalie. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's proven that he can play at the NHL level. Same as Joey. Joey's an NHL goalie. I mean, we had the pleasure of getting to watch them all last year. Mm-hmm. And they both carry themselves very well. They both carry themselves with a lot of confidence. And I think that's the great thing is, I mean, Chris coming in this year, last year of a deal, you could get a guy that's had to rehab a knee and I can guarantee it's not that much fun. I've done that before. There's no fun to it. Mm-hmm. Could have played out the year. Yeah, he's made great money down here. But he wants to get back to the National Hockey League, and you can see it by the way he plays, by the way he carries himself. And he's definitely been the backbone of things here. And you look at the game the other night, the first 10 minutes, we could have been down 3 or 4 nothing, but Driggs kept us there and allowed the guys to get their feet underneath them. And that's a sign of a good NHL goalie.
No question. Would absolutely echo. I don't think it's going to be too long before Driggs is back in the NHL, wherever that may be. One of the real good guys on and off the ice in all of professional hockey. Grant, I think we have to end with the milkshake talk. Mr. Softy, okay, what's your go-to? I'm going to be honored to have it for the first time before the game tomorrow. So I want to know, give me some help. What do I order? What's your order? What's your experience there?
Well, Evan has vanilla every day.
Okay.
So he's not real experimental. I've tried them all. So, and there's a lot of good ones, but my go-to is the mint.
Is it a mint chocolate chip or just a mint shake?
I get the mint, but we'll mix mint and chocolate once in a while. Okay. The black cherry's pretty good. There you go. Mango's good.
Is it?
So okay. There's a lot of options.
I'm going to have to go to bed thinking. Instead of counting sheep, I'll be counting ice cream flavors.
We can have one each period.
Grant, you're going to get in on this too, right?
Of course, yeah. I mean, you mentioned black cherry. I'm usually a strawberry milkshake kind of guy, but I've got to try black cherry.
The strawberry's pretty good too, but black cherry's good.
Okay. Strawberry is pretty darn good, man.
Yeah, I mean, but you never see black cherry on a menu. Yeah, that's you got to try that.
There's no such thing as a bad milkshake.
That's true.
Could I maybe do one before the game, one after the first period, after the second period, and maybe a post game shake? Does that be too much?
Do you want me to bring you a bottle of Pepto? I would highly recommend it.
I was going to say I would probably need to be a restroom close by.
As your producer, I'll make sure to bring the Tums for
Thank
you. So.
Thank you. Well, this has been awesome. Grant Fuhr, you could be doing a lot of things with your time. You could be on the golf course. You could be spending time with a lot of other people. We really appreciate having you on to be able to get some of your insight and learn about not only your career, but you as a person and all the great things you're doing now. So thank you so much for your time and continued best of luck in everything that you do.
It's my pleasure.
Signals from the Deep is the official podcast of the Seattle Kraken, hosted by Nick Olchek and produced by me, Grant Beery. Have a question for Nick? Leave a voicemail on the Signals from the Deep hotline at 206-279-7810 or send an email to signals@seattlekraken.com. Your question could be featured on an upcoming episode.